and welcome to episode 27 of React Native Radio. I am your host, Nader Dabit. Today on our panel, we have Peter Pykarczyk.
Hey, everybody.
And our special guest today is Jake Taylor of Fuse Tools.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Jake. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's go ahead and get into, I guess, a little bit of your background first. Can you kind of give us an idea of how you got into coding and the software industry and give us that little background information first?
Yeah, so I started like playing around with code, or I guess, you know, HTML is kind of where I started when I was about 9 years old. And it was just one of those things that like someone just shows it to you and like you can make little crappy web pages, but you can actually make something. And it was one of those things that just really clicked with me. And so I've just been, I guess, writing software ever since. And I kind of ended up specializing in like native code and graphics and GPUs, which is kind of what led me to work with the team that I'm with now. Because that's kind of our background, as we're all GPU heads. And I don't know, one thing led to another, and here we are now with Fuse.
So are you from the United States, I guess?
Yes, I'm American. For those of you who don't know, the reason he's asking is because my company is Norwegian. And I'm American. I'm actually from Idaho. It's about as close to being Norwegian as you can get in this country.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So yeah, go ahead and give us a little info about Fuse Tools and what you guys offer, and then we'll get into some questions.
So Fuse provides a way to a cross-platform way to build native mobile apps. I guess that's sort of the tagline, right? And so our big thing is that we provide a way to do very real-time edits to your apps. And so like our goal is that we want to sort of build what we call the app development tools of the future. And our primary sort of directive with that is to get designers and developers to be working more collaboratively, you know, like on the same files and with the same sort of substrate to actually build their apps. Instead of like, you know, the designer working on a mockup and then the coder trying to match that with whatever tools they have, they're actually working in the same thing. And they're able to go back and forth a lot more smoothly than they do now.
Okay, cool. So when you say that it's a way to build native mobile apps or prototype them, does it actually compile to native code?
Yeah, so there's a couple caveats here. The broad answer is yes, asterisk. And the caveat there is that, so we have a markup language that we use to actually describe most of your layout and also your animations and gestures, and that will all get compiled down to native code. But then we also have JavaScript for business logic, and that doesn't get compiled, but it will always stay off your UI thread, so it's still very fast. The idea being that we can do things like live reload on the business logic of your app if we have a dynamic interpreted language like JavaScript. So that's sort of the... you know, most everything you do in Fuse is native, but there is this business logic component that you'll do with JavaScript.
So I guess when you're creating like a project, can you create it with one code base and then compile it to both iOS and Android? Or how does that work?
That is exactly the case. Of course, you can specialize on different platforms if you need like a feature that's only available on one of them. But the idea is that you'll be able to use one code base and cover both platforms.
So can you pretty much use any type of framework you'd like if you want to use Angular, React, and that type of stuff? Or is there a certain framework that you kind of have built into the Fuse platform?
Yeah, so Fuse has its own sort of way of working and way of doing things. We are also looking into integrating things like Angular 2 is one that we've actually made considerable progress on. We're looking into things like React Native for the future as well, just to basically have coder compatibility, because those are awesome projects and we want to be able to support people that are used to those ways of working, but also give them the benefits of using Fuse.
So what does it take to get started with Fuse? What do I have to do to, you know, start building apps?
Yeah, so first thing you'd have to do is go to fusetools.com, and there's a get started button on our little toolbar. Through that, you'll download Fuse. You'll install that, and then once that's done, depending on the different platforms that you'll export for, you may have to install additional packages, but we have, you know, extensive guides for how to do this. Fuse makes that really easy. Like, it's like a single command line thing that you run, and then you can export to Android. And once you've done that, you can, you know, open Fuse, create a project that way, or from your terminal, do Fuse create app, and then you have a project.
Cool. That's really exciting, and it seems like it's really easy to get started.
That's the dream.
Yeah. I also noticed that, do you have some sort of like sketch compatibility?
Yeah, so we have a way to, I guess earlier I mentioned we have this UX markup that's used to describe, you know, how things are laid out. And that's just a really declarative way of, you know, defining layouts. So the sketch compatibility we have now is that we have a sketch importer that will import a sketch file and convert it to UX markup. And so the idea being that this would be a starting point for your app. So if you have an existing design, you drag it into Fuse, and then you have all this UX code already ready for you.
Oh, nice. So like from a designer standpoint, that is pretty exciting because they can just take their sketch file and drop it into Fuse. I know that you guys want to kind of like bring designers and developers closer together.
Yeah, that's a huge part of what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Can you talk more about like why like a designer might want to use this tool?
I guess I want to talk about kind of where we're going versus where we are right now. So we're still currently in beta. We're in open beta, so you can try our stuff out, right now. But because, we want to do this, like we want to change the way apps are developed pretty fundamentally. And we want this sort of real-time way of working. You'll hear me say that a lot because it's really, really resonates with what we're doing. We want this to sort of touch every part of app development. So like one of the things that a lot of other tools has is, live reload. So like you'll save a file and it will just update on your preview or on your device or both. And that's pretty cool. But we also want to go a step further and build visual tools on top that also modify your declarative document, but give you things like sliders or drag and drop tools for, adding animations. These are things that like prototyping tools already kind of have. But the problem is you're working with prototypes. And we want to make it so that those kind of tools will actually make you, or like you can use those kind of tools to actually build a real app. So you as a designer and you as a developer can both work on the same projects in the same substrate and build your app. So I guess to sort of bring that home is that where we are currently is that we've sort of focused on the developer story first because we're building the platform from the bottom up. And then we're moving in the direction of having these designer tools. So currently we have some small incarnation of that kind of tooling that we call the inspector that will give you basic sliders for, some of the properties available in Fuse. As a designer, and as we move forward and we start getting these, more proper drag and drop tools and also integrate better with existing tools so you can just kind of use the things you're used to, then this, I think, will be a lot more attractive to designers.
Absolutely. And looking at the markup, and granted, I am a developer, so,
right.
Any designers listening, take a look for yourself. But the markup is really straightforward. And I mean, the syntax highlighting on your website is awesome too. And it makes a lot of sense. It's not anything crazy. It's like very readable. There's no like weird JavaScript, that like you might come across when working on other stuff. It just makes a lot of sense and it's easy to read.
Yeah. So a couple of things about that. That's one of the primary things that we like. This is one of the reasons why we did a whole custom solution. It's just like, HTML is cool because a lot of people know it and because it can express a lot of things. But the things you want to express aren't necessarily very easy to express with HTML. And we wanted to basically fix that. We wanted to have, a markup-ish way of working, like a really declarative language for doing UIs, specifically for mobile. We really built it with these use cases in mind. And that's why, especially with the examples that we have on the website, the code is fairly straightforward and easy to read, because the language was designed for this.
I'm curious about integrating native SDKs and things like that. What if someone wanted to build like a Facebook, login type of thing? Like, is that possible right now with Fuse?
Yes, it totally is. So there's a couple different stories you have for that. The first one is that if they provide like a JavaScript client library, you can just drop that in with the rest of your JavaScript code and it will most likely work. I mean, of course, there's some lower level details that we're still working out, but that generally works. The other way to do it is kind of the way that you're alluding to, which is you wrap the native SDKs in a way that is, compatible with our JavaScript and package that as, a package other people can use as well. And so for that story, we actually have a feature called foreign code where you can still, include full Objective-C or Java files in your project or just write them, small functions here and there. And yeah, you're able to package them up that way.
Do you expose code the same way as you would in like a React Native project where you may implement the methods on the Swift side, but you can call them on the JavaScript side?
I'm actually not familiar really with how React Native does that. So from what you just said, where you can like write a Swift function and then call it from JavaScript, yes, we support that way of working, but I don't know how automatic the glue is in React Native. For us, there is a little bit of glue that you'll have to write, and I guess there would be for React Native as well. But that is generally the idea. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So it looks like Vue is free now. Do you guys have any plans of charging a cost for this, or what's your plan in the future to make money?
Yeah, so I mean, clearly we have to make some kind of money if we're going to keep building this thing. And so our main plan is that the current offering that we have, as I mentioned before, we're in open beta. The current offering that we have is always going to be free. And in fact, we're working on open sourcing a lot of it, especially the core libraries, like all of the classes that you use with UX. That's kind of what the core libraries encompass, and a lot of the glue logic as well. All of that will be open source. In terms of us making money, some of the designers tools that I alluded to earlier, those are going to be what we're going to start charging for.
So when are you guys going to be out of beta, and what is that going to mean for Fuse as far as the robustness of any apps that you could build in the on the platform?
Do you mean like the robustness of it now and like how that's going to change over time?
Yeah, just I'm kind of curious if you guys are shooting for what exactly you guys are shooting for to get out of beta.
Yeah. So first of all, we went into public beta last October. So it's actually been pretty recent that we did that. And before that, we were in kind of a closed beta for like a year where we had some handpicked sort of customer cases that we worked with. So we've had a pretty fair run. We have, I think, you know, a decent number of users that are actually active and really using this thing by now. But of course, there are quirks. I mean, it is beta. In terms of robustness, you know, I think the dev team actually puts like their biggest, you know, architectural changes that they're going to make for a long time, like, you know, last night or something. So in the next few weeks, those will bubble up and then those will sort of stabilize over time. And then, you know, that's just going to be how it is, I guess. In terms of when we're going to be, you know, moving into 1.0, we're shooting for sort of this fall kind of time frame. I mean, we'll see how, you know, things go, but that's kind of what we're shooting for. And by then we want to have, you know, an incarnation of, you know, the designer tools that we were talking about earlier. But in terms of like the robustness of the apps you're building, I guess my point is that not a lot of fundamental things are going to change from here on out, even though we're still in beta.
What kind of developer are you guys targeting with Fuse? Is it going to be someone that already knows how to develop an iOS that wants to kind of do cross-platform, or is it just something for JavaScript developers, or kind of what kind of do you see as the main audience?
I think all of the above, really. So we have, you know, the foreign code features are really attractive to the people that are used to working in native. The problem with working in native, I mean, obviously, is going to be your compile times and the amount of time you actually spend waiting when you're actually iterating on your app. Because one of the things that's always common is that, like, you know, you can have a designer that spends, you know, 100 years designing the perfect app, but there's always going to be something where it either doesn't line up when it's actually implemented, or there was just something that was missed in the design, and you're going to have to go back and iterate. And when you make those changes, you don't want to be waiting, you know, 5 minutes for a recompile and a redeploy. And so that's, you know, one of the huge benefits of, yeah, kind of working in real time. So even like native platform developers should be able to feel that and should really be able to feel those benefits. In terms of like targeting sort of JavaScript people, again, like I think, you know, we made the decision to use JavaScript because it was a dynamic language that a lot of people know. And even people that, you know, aren't from the web world or using JavaScript heavily are able to pick it up, you know, because it has pretty familiar syntax. The object model is pretty simple. So it was really like sort of the most sensible choice when we needed a dynamic language. So it wasn't really a targeting choice. It was more of like, this technically makes sense. So I really think all of the above is sort of the answer to your question.
I really encourage everyone to check out the examples on FuseTools.com because the animations are insane.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. One question I have is there anything that Fuse can't do, at least right now?
Yeah, I would have to say the biggest one is probably that we only support iOS and Android because we're really trying to nail you know, the mobile experience on platforms, you know, that we can actually support fully. I mean, our team is about 25 people right now, so we're fairly small. And so, you know, the choice to only do iOS and Android really just makes sense with our team size and just how big of a project this actually is.
So with such a small team, were there any like challenges or pain points you had while building Fuse?
Oh, all the time. The thing is that when you're doing a cross-platform, you know, like app development platform, you really have to touch everything. And so you find quirks under every rock. Like, you know, our text inputs are native text inputs, for instance. And there were things like, oh, you know, getting these to have their own specific layout that is compatible with our layout system. You know, that was a pain point and those kind of things. And these are all little things that you'll hit, you know, if you try to do cross-platform apps anyway. It's just that because we're doing a platform, we hit them all. So, I mean, it's hard to come up with specifics because there's so many, right? But like, yeah, I think we hit a lot of pain points. But you know, that's just kind of what this is about. And I don't know, we're all hobbyists, or I guess the vast majority of our team are all hobbyist programmers. And I keep saying GPU heads because we really just like graphics. And I don't know, it's just really the kind of work we enjoy, the kind of, I guess, masochistic, hardcore coding challenges that we just really like to solve.
Yeah, I was going to say, this seems like a spectacular engineering feat, to say the least, you know, what you guys are trying to do. So how many developers do you have on your team?
Just trying to count my head. I think of the 25 people that we have, like 18 or 20 of them are developers.
Oh, wow. That's a fairly large team.
The vast majority of us are developers. Even a lot of the marketing people are developers. That's awesome. I mean, you know, they're not always writing code for Fuse, but, you know, we all kind of come from a similar background.
So do you guys have like separate teams that work on iOS and Android, or are most of them cross language and cross platform developers?
So I would put them as developers in the second camp, but you know, in terms of actually getting the project done, we have, you know, different teams that here's some guys that focus mostly on iOS, and these are guys that focus mostly on Android. Of course, a lot of the team members kind of overlap. Like it's hard for me to point at a developer and say, oh, he's in the Android team, because it's really, he's in the Android team, but sometimes he also touches the compiler and sometimes he also does this thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of overlap in terms of personnel, but we do, you know, try to have pretty clear teams.
And I know you mentioned that the company is based in Norway. Is that where most of the developers live, or do you guys have people working in remote areas?
Yeah. So the vast majority of us are in Norway. We have a small office in Palo Alto, where like I'm currently stationed. And then we have a couple, like we have a designer right now that's in South Africa, and we have a developer that's in Germany. And so there's a couple remote guys, but most of them are in Norway.
So this is a little off track, but how's that been going for you guys with having people kind of literally all over the world working on this?
Well, most of the people that are developers are all in sort of, you know, Europe. And that really helps, because at least they're not really in different time zones. In terms of like the split between Norway and Palo Alto, it kind of works out naturally because we focus mostly on, you know, marketing, product development in Palo Alto, and then, you know, engineering and that kind of thing in Norway. It's actually been pretty balanced.
So I know that Fuse uses JavaScript too. Can you use NPM? And if you can you tell us a little more about how that works?
Fuse uses JavaScript mainly for like all the business logic in your app. And currently, you know, we're still in beta. So package managers is one of the things that we're working on really hard right now. You can use NPM in the sense that you might have to do some of like the require linking by hand at the moment. But we plan to actually support that case fully in the future, at least for, you know, full JavaScript things. And then we'll have kind of our own more higher level solution for, you know, specific Fuse components that encompass not only business logic in the form of JavaScript, but also the UX markup, you know, that actually presents what the business logic is meant to show. So yeah, so it's does that make sense?
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah. So this kind of leads into my second question. Can you share stuff across like different platforms too? Like say I was building like a web version of a Fuse app. Can I share some of that code in an easy way?
So are you talking like I have an app and I want it to be on mobile and web and I'm trying to share a lot of code between those?
Yeah, you know, just like the data layer, let's say, right? Or any sort of fetching that may have to take place.
So that is totally, you're totally able to share that code. I mean, there are some limitations that are actually very similar to if you are trying to share that kind of code between something that runs in the web versus something that runs on Node.js. Like the the execution environment is slightly different. But, you know, JavaScript is JavaScript. And, you know, if you have some, you know, basic HTTP requests and stuff, which of course we do, then a lot of it just works. So I would say 99% of the time, yes.
So this is kind of getting back into what we talked about when we were talking about how Fuse works. But so can you kind of walk us through what happens when you create a Fuse project, what files get created for you, and kind of where you go and get started and things like that?
Yeah. So the most basic app template that you'll get with Fuse, you just like type Fuse create app on the command line and then, you know, the name of whatever it's going to be. And so it'll give you a folder. And inside that folder, there's a .uno proj file. And that's like your project. And then you have a main view.ux file, which is, you know, your UX stuff. And that really just contains like an empty app tag. And so that's where you start in the most simple template. And we have a couple others that will, you know, include a couple other things, but it's basically the same stuff. It's just a project file and some UX. And that's where you start.
And so what if you wanted to go ahead and write some Objective-C, where would that code go?
That goes pretty much anywhere you want it. It gets linked into your file by modifying the project file. So you can basically put it anywhere.
And then, so you wanted to run it on the simulator. Is that like a command line thing?
I prefer to do a command line, of course. But we also have like a dashboard that you can run it from there as well. The other thing too, now that you mentioned simulators. So this stuff works with, you know, the simulators provided by the OS vendors. So your iOS simulator or your Android simulator. But at the same time, we also supply our own simulator that is specialized for the case of, you know, showing Fuse stuff. And it tends to be a lot faster, a lot simpler. So yeah, so if you, you know, create your Fuse app, like I mentioned previously, and then navigate into that folder and type Fuse preview, then that's what's going to pop up. And it's quite fast. If you go to the Fuse website, I believe there's a community tab. And on there, you'll find a ton of like tutorial videos. And the reason I bring this up is because in these tutorial videos, you'll see, well, in some of them, you'll actually see that there's a phone that I'm recording. You'll also oftentimes see just like a screen cap of a simulator. And that simulator is the Fuse simulator.
So when I ran Fuse, I didn't even realize I was actually on your simulator and not the iOS simulator because it looked so good. Can you kind of go into the technical challenges rebuilding a simulator?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. So we have the simulator that runs locally on your PC, but we also actually have a simulator that'll run on your device. So when you preview on a specific device, which you'll do to get like live reload on your device specifically, or on multiple devices, because we support that as well. It's kind of the same thing where you just kind of have a blank canvas and then, you know, we'll be displaying different kinds of UI elements depending on what your UX specifies. We can sort of stream that over Wi-Fi. So like you'll deploy the preview app to your device and then you can actually unplug it because it's just Wi-Fi connected. And so, yeah, so you'll get live updates that way. So building the sort of PC simulator, or we just call it like PC preview or local preview, it was actually more of just like a different export target. So, you know, our tools can export C++ or Objective-C for Android or iOS, but they can also export .NET bytecode. And that's actually what we run in the PC preview.
Okay, I'm kind of curious about who you guys kind of see as a similar platform as yours, and how are you different than those other platforms? I guess maybe things like React Native and Ionic, they have like a build tool and things like that.
Another thing where we're really similar to React Native is that, you know, we sort of orchestrate native UI components and then have JavaScript running in the background that kind of, you know, does business logic. So a couple differences between us and React Native specifically. The first one, and I haven't even really talked about this, but most of the examples that you see on our website don't actually use native components for most of the components. I mean, like your text input and your text rendering are, of course, going to be native. But the other ones are custom, like, you know, custom look and feel. And we have this because we have our own custom OpenGL renderer. Again, I mentioned, you know, we're all GPU guys. So that's, of course, the thing that we really wanted to make, right? And so we can actually do, you know, fully custom rendering that's just not at all through, you know, any web-based solution. It's our own custom OpenGL-based renderer. So that would be sort of the first one. The second one's actually kind of a bigger thing, is sort of the philosophical difference between us and React Native. So our whole thing, again, is to really enable this real-time workflow, especially between designers and developers. And that's kind of always been our goal. Whereas React Native, the goal was more like, hey, we have this really cool way of working on web. Let's now apply that to mobile, if that makes sense. So like, I feel like React Native kind of took a top-down approach where they had a way of working and they want to apply it to different platforms, which is really cool. And then we're different in just in the way that we kind of went bottom up. Like we made some really cool native mobile tech, and then we wanted to kind of put a way of working on top of that. So I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm guessing you guys are not really competing as far as things like Ionic, because you guys are not even really doing the view within the actual app. You're not doing like a web view. You're actually rendering native components.
Correct. And I mean, on that note, of course, we have web view components. So if you want to have a web view, and particularly for cases like charting, there's a lot of very mature HTML-based charting libraries and those kind of things. And so if you want to use those things, you could just pop a web view in your app anyway, and it just works seamlessly with the OpenGL rendered controls. But yeah, like fundamentally, we are native.
So would you say things like AppCelerator, Titanium, things like that might be something more along the same lines as what you guys are building?
Yes and no. I still think our goals are a bit fundamentally different. I think, again, our real-time way of working and sort of that philosophy that we kind of put into everything we're doing is still a big differentiator. But I guess in terms of, you know, technically, we are doing a lot of the same things. But again, you know, ours just comes from such a different background and just kind of has such a different character, I think.
I'm just kind of interested in hearing more about like what you're excited about, Jake, in terms of what you may have seen the community put together, you know?
Yeah. So, of course, we're still pretty new. You know, we only went into open beta last October. But already since then, we've had a couple really exciting app projects already come out of the works. And so one of those is called Deem, or Deem Movies. And that's a really cool app made by a South American team that's kind of similar to IMDb in that you can, you know, browse movies and select movies and that kind of thing. And it looks really great. I don't know. I think it's a really good showcase about kind of what Fuse is about in terms of like being able to build really differentiating apps that work on both platforms and not really having to have that native expertise that it would have taken otherwise. Another smaller showcase app that I really like is it's called Conrad Wise. And it's kind of funny because really it's just like a Wikipedia kind of shell. Like you'll ask it'll ask you like, what do you want to know about? And you just say a thing like cats, and it will just start like, you know, telling you things about cats is basically from Wikipedia. But the way that it flows and the way that it actually feels as an app is actually really nice. And so oftentimes I've started to use it, like instead of Googling things, I'll just ask it because it's just so cool.
That is pretty cool, especially if you're using it on your own, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, beyond that, things I'm generally excited about that the community is putting together is they're starting to be like, we're really starting to hit that critical mass where our users are starting to build a lot of reusable components and sharing that with each other. And that's just a cool thing to see, you know, as a platform developer, to actually see things starting to take off.
So as we know, in JavaScript, there's like a million different libraries to do the same thing. And in iOS, there's like one library to do a certain thing. Do you have like a personal opinion or a roadmap in terms of community supported components, or, you know, like just creating your own and saying like, hey, use this one, like it's the best way to handle a situation?
So I guess like, you know, we provide a lot of ways to do a lot of things. In particular, like if you want to build a scalable app, you know, we have a way to do that. Or if you want to, like there are certain patterns and certain ways that we can do animation that's like, this is kind of the way you do this, or navigation's a big one. But, you know, yeah, of course, users, because they have the power to build these libraries, will probably build their own. And maybe they're cooler than what we have, and maybe they're not. You know what I mean? I don't know if we've seen a lot of those kind of components sort of come out yet, to where that's really a question that we've actually kind of had to face, if that makes sense. But I mean, we're already seeing that there's a couple community driven projects that we're just pushing. Like, for instance, one guy did an SQLite library. It's like, well, cool, this is a really good library. And of course, we're happy to push that as sort of, you know, the way that you would use SQLite with Fuse currently. And that's really cool. Like, we're really happy to promote when the community's doing those kind of things. But in general, I mean, we just want to enable people to kind of work how they want in the framework of, you know, doing things very quickly and being real time. So I guess anything that the users create is just really awesome for us.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense.
So before we wrap it up, is there anything that you guys have planned over the next year that you kind of want to talk about? Any big plans that you guys are shooting for?
Well, we really want to hit that 1.0 release. I think our biggest goal in the next year is to hit 1.0.
Okay, awesome. I think we'll go ahead and get to our picks. Peter, cool. Do you have any picks tonight?
Yeah, so something exciting that I saw today, and like interesting because I wasn't expecting this to come from them, but Microsoft came out with the Workflow Keyboard app for iOS. I'm not sure if either of you guys have seen this yet, but...
Yes, I have that. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I have not.
Okay, so just to describe it, you can easily type one-handed on an iPhone because it'll create a keyboard not the way you're used to at the bottom of your screen, but it's kind of, it turns it into like a circular thing, and it just goes as far as like your finger would naturally go, and it makes typing and auto completion so much easier.
Oh, so it's like saying like, oh, you've typed WA, and then like it'll kind of, you know, suggest all the letters around in that circle, but the one you're more likely to hit are kind of in comfortable positions for your thumb?
No, I think the keyboard is static. It's just, I guess it's a little more ergodynamic. It's a circle shape instead of just the typical square.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it seems really cool right now. I wonder how long I'll last with it, but it feels natural.
Oh, so you're actually trying it now too?
Yeah, it's on the App Store.
Oh, yeah, really cool. Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. That sounds really cool.
Okay, Jake, do you have any picks?
Yeah, I thought I'd throw you guys a curveball. So, you know, as I mentioned before, a lot of us at Fuse are kind of, you know, GPU heads and we're kind of, you know, down and dirty native coder guys. And a project that I've been really excited about and just using a lot in my free time is the Rust programming language. So have either of you guys heard of this?
Yeah, I actually finished a book on Rust about 5 months ago that was really interesting, but I'm not really into that low level stuff, but I really am fascinated by it, but I don't really use it in my day-to-day work, but yeah.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I figured that'd be the case. I just thought it'd be fun to bring up. So I mean, I really like Rust because as like a guy that does a lot of native code, especially in my free time, it's like, you know, I get a lot of benefits that I would get from doing like garbage collected languages, but it's in, you know, a systems level language without GC. And so I get a lot of performance benefits. And in general, against something like C++, I'm just writing a lot less code. So I just think it's really cool. And the community is just absolutely fantastic. So I would definitely recommend checking that out if anyone's into native code at all.
Do you That's think awesome. Do you think Rust 2 and Swift 3 will be one and the same? Have you heard that rumor?
I haven't heard that rumor, but I'm not surprised at all to hear that. That's funny. You know what? I honestly don't, just because I think the philosophies are a little bit different. Like the language design is obviously very similar. And I think Rust are, you know, I think they're both actually really cool. One of the things that I really like about both of them is they take a lot of, you know, functional programming ideas or I guess language features that you would find in functional languages like destructuring and pattern matching and those kind of things. And they're actually applying it to, you know, code that runs natively. I mean, the memory model is a little different between the two, but generally, linguistically, I think they're pretty similar. And I don't know, I think they're both heading in really good directions, but I think they'll start diverging a little more as time goes on.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you guys use any Rust at Fuse right now?
We don't at Fuse. The native code layers that we have, you know, are pretty specific and do very specific things. And the other thing about a language like Rust is, you know, it takes time for a lot of people to learn it. And, you know, we have a lot of guys that have to touch that kind of code. So we're using mostly C++ at that level. But I use it a lot in my personal projects.
Okay, well, I have two picks. They're both books. The first one is Reactive Programming with RxJS by Sergi Mancilla, I think is his name. And it's out by Pragmatic Programmers, that group of books. It's about 200 pages long. Just finished it, and it was really another good introduction to RxJS if you're trying to look into that. The other book is
I have a quick note on that if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been really interested in it lately.
Yeah, so we think reactive programming is really, really cool. We're using it internally, you know, in parts of our simulator. And also, big thing about working with Fuse is that we have a JavaScript library that provides observables that are very similar to what RxJS is doing. But one of the fundamental differences that you might find really interesting is that each observable in like RxJS, you could consider like one stream of values, right? Like it's an identity for a stream of values, like a push-based collection. But ours actually have, you know, one identity can actually have multiple streams. And the advantage of this is that you can now have that one identity representing arrays. And of course, you could do that with, you know, RxJS if you just push a new array every time. But the advantage is that, you know, you can add and remove elements and actually get that semantic add and remove, like which element was added or removed specifically, all the way down down the line for all your observables. And where that relates to what Fuse is doing is that we can actually use that to, you know, trigger animations. Like if you remove something from a list, we know exactly which one was removed without having to do any like diffing or anything. And we can, you know, animate that away and stuff. So it's actually pretty cool.
Oh, that's really cool. So is any of that observable stuff exposed to the front end, or is that more on the end of the guys developing Fuse itself?
So it's actually the primary method of data binding.
Oh, nice.
Like if you want to describe anything that's changeable in Fuse that will maybe cause a UI update, you make it an observable. Because we just think this is such a cool way to work.
And is the API similar to RxJS as far as like the map and flat map and stuff like that?
So it's extremely similar. But of course, one of the interesting things that happens when you, you know, have that sort of multi-stream observable model is that you have cases where it's like sometimes you want to filter, as in you don't want to pass certain values through one stream. But sometimes you want to filter as in you don't want, like if you have 8 streams in one observable, so you want to only have like 6 of those in a next observable, if that makes sense. And so you have like a concept of filter that goes kind of 2 ways laterally, if that makes sense. It's kind of confusing if I can't like draw on a whiteboard, but the reason I bring it up is because, you know, we have things like filter and flat map that are like, you know, the same as you would get with RxJS. But then we also, if you guys are familiar with like the C# world, there's this thing called Link, and it's a language integrated query. And it allows you to have a lot of these, you know, functional things on a lot of, you know, default collections and that kind of stuff. And it follows a naming convention that's much more similar to SQL. So instead of filter, you get where and that kind of thing. Instead of fold, you get aggregate. And so we actually take those names for the ones where it's like, you don't want certain streams to show up in your observable. So like where is the same as filter, but it works on entire streams. So those can be added and removed.
That's pretty cool.
So this is like extremely useful, especially in cases like if you want to have like a list of items that's being shown and you want to like literally filter the list, like where is a really good operator because they'll just be added and removed as whole streams, but then the individual values can still be updated. So it's really interesting. I mean, I really like both really low level native code and high level functional code. So if you get me going, man, I'll go for hours. But
no, that sounds pretty like useful. It sounds pretty interesting. I'm going to definitely want to take a look at that. So
cool.
And I guess my last pick is a book called Hagakure, I think is how it's pronounced. And it's basically an old group of philosophical ideas and things on how to live your life and how to approach different issues that come into your life. So it's spelled Hagakure. And if you're interested in that type of stuff, check it out.
Cool. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
Awesome. Well, Jake, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to come on our show today.
Yeah, and thanks so much for having me. This is really fun.
And that wraps up episode 27 of React Native Radio. We'll see everyone next week.